Rachel Ross, everybody.
I drove 12 miles in the dark, in the rain, just to come tell this story. I really wanted to do it. It doesn't matter if it's a thin room, because I like the practice. I'm a storyteller. My son, Jesse, looked up at me with big brown saucer eyes. He was pointing to the ground, and he said, "Mama, what's that?" I did not want to tell him the unvarnished, immutable truth of our situation. He was only 5 years old. He had just turned 5 years old. And everyone who is a parent knows that you relish those moments of innocence. You want to keep that innocent little garden of Eden full of delights for your child as long as possible. And as an educator and a person who loved being a mom, I really enjoyed those teachable moments with my son where I got to see his wonder and I got to explain the world of numbers and shapes and all the natural forces. And he would respond in quirky little ways, and I so enjoyed keeping him innocent. He would say crazy little things like the time we were at the pediatrician waiting in the exam room, and the pediatrician comes in, and by way of greeting, he says, "Hey, Jesse, what shape you in these days?" And he said proudly, "I'm a rectangle." He had just learned his shapes. And one time I was in the kitchen and I heard him getting increasingly madder at a ping pong ball that would not obey his command to stay where he had put it on the edge of a rounded sofa. And he was picking it up. I said, stay there. And I was listening in the kitchen and I said, this is a great moment, a teachable moment. And I came and I sat down and I explained to him in kid-friendly terms the principle of gravity exerting on mass. And I said, if you put the ping pong ball just at the edge, it's going to fall every time. There is this invisible force that is part of our world. And he was thrilled to discover this, and it kept him busy for the next 45 minutes putting the ping pong ball at the edge and just seeing exactly where gravity started. And he was just so thrilled that he couldn't see this force, but he could test it, and it became palpable to him. And I enjoyed that very much. Another lesson was object permanence. You know, babies love it when the mom or the dad puts their hands over their face and then shows, you know, peekaboo, because they realize that the person stays even though they can't see the person, and this gives them great delight. And with Jesse, he learned about object permanence, and he understood full well when he watched the animated version of 101 Dalmatians that these were drawings, because he used to draw too, and these were not real people. But when Glenn Close played Cruella de Vil in the live-action feature film of 101 Dalmatians, and she played it with such gusto, he was terrified of her. He thought she continued after the movie and that she would come and get our dog, who had beautiful brown fur, and he was quite freaked out. And I would explain to him, this was a difficult concept for him to grasp, that she was an actor, that she was a person who put on the clothing and played the role, and then when she was done with the movie, she took off the clothing, she was a mom, and she, just like me, it was a job. Her name was Glenn Close. She was not really Cruella. Cruella was not real. And this was really hard for him to grasp until one day, he shrieked. We were driving in the car, and he shrieked from the back seat in his little car seat, and, "Mama, look, Mama, look." And I had to pull over because he was shrieking so loud, and he's pointing to a billboard, and he says, Cruella Close got a new job. And there was a billboard for her next movie, which was, she was a prisoner of war in the Bhutan March, and she looked completely different, but he recognized her, and he grasped the concept that she was an actor, and that people don different roles and play different roles. So these are the wonderful moments that I enjoyed with my son. And that day that he asked me, Mama, what's that? I knew he was asking me a deeper question because it was clearly a dead bird on the sidewalk in our little Culver City neighborhood. And someone had drawn a chalk line around it. And it was in a state of decomposition that he had not seen. You see, with the Disney movies, they never show, they often kill off the mom or the parent, but they don't show it. Like in Bambi, you hear the gunshot, and then the big buck comes and says, your mother's not coming home, Bambi. And that's how Disney treats death. And so my son had never actually seen death. And this was a bird that was in a, that was still recognizable as a bird. And I felt it was really important, even though I wanted to protect him, that I tell the truth. And I said, well, in kid-friendly language, the bird died because probably it was very old and its body couldn't function anymore and its life force couldn't stay in the body anymore. And it died and now it's crumbling and it will rejoin the earth, become dirt and feed the plants. It's the cycle of life. It happens to everybody. And that was the moment, and he was quiet, and then he's looking at the bird, and he looks up at me, and he says, not Grandma and Grandpa. And I said, yeah, even Grandma and Grandpa, but not for a long, long time. They're really healthy. And then he said, not me. And I said, all of us. And I felt it was important to just stay in that moment with him. And I said, you have many, many, many years to live. I had just taught him to count to 10 with popsicle sticks, and we had done 10 tens, groups of 10. And I said, probably, you know those popsicle sticks, like 100 of them. You have a long life ahead of you. And then you could see in his face this dawning of our the realization of our mortal coil. And then he just shuddered and he clutched my hand and he said, not you. And I said, even me. And then I said, but I eat a lot of vegetables. I exercise. I'm very healthy and I drive carefully and I'm gonna live a long, long time, honey. So in that sense, I provided a reassurance and didn't go full bore into the serendipity of life and the unfairness of life. I felt that was just enough for that moment. And at that moment, a kitten came out of somebody's yard and ran across the sidewalk. Thank goodness for kittens. It distracted him. And by the time we walked home, he was his bubbly little cherub self. A week later, he started kindergarten. And although he was very excited to go to kindergarten, had been all summer, he knew many of the kids who were going. And the school was only 7 houses away from our house, and it was only a half day. He cried uncontrollably for the whole half day, the first day, and the second day, and the third day. And the principal became very concerned because he was so inconsolable and his crying was disruptive. And And nobody could figure it out. She asked me, "What's going on at home? What's going on?" I said, "Nothing. It's pretty just regular." He was very excited to go to kindergarten. I'm not sure. The first 5 days of kindergarten, he was inconsolable. And on the Saturday following that first week, we were lazing around, reading books and just cozy. And I tried to get at the bottom of his grief and his fear. And he told me that he said, "What will happen to me if something happens to you and I'm at school? I'll be left at school." He was fearful of being abandoned. There was no big buck in his life like Bambi. His father was a musician and on the road a lot and not really present in his life, in and out. And you know, as parents, when we put our kids in school, we always sign those emergency cards, and the office keeps them on file. You know there's a plan in place, but being 5 years old, he didn't know that. And he felt that existential angst of being abandoned or being left. And as soon as I realized that, how much he needed that concrete feeling of assurance, I took out a big piece of paper and I called it the plan. And I said, "The holder of this letter has permission to take Jesse home if something happens to his mom." I made 2 copies, folded them up, put them in some bright yellow envelopes, put a ton of lipstick on, sealed them with a kiss in the envelopes, and we made a big deal of going over to Auntie Debbie's house, my sister. And he hand-delivered that letter to his auntie, and he told her, "Put it in a place where you won't lose it." And he was satisfied. She put it right by her bed on her nightstand. And then we drove over to Grandma and Grandpa's house, and these are his beloveds. They are in his life, but he needed this kind of a surety. And he gave it to Grandma and Grandpa. He said, "Put it someplace where you won't lose it." And then he was satisfied because they put it right by the phone in the kitchen. And with that, he went back to kindergarten, no more tears, and he thrived. And today he's a 27-year-old, wonderful young man doing well. And even though those envelopes no longer exist, that plan is still in place metaphorically. He knows, and we all know, that's what we have, that the promise of the embrace of people who will love us and care for us when we're felled by sorrow or loss, that's really all we have to cushion the blow of the full reveal.